What is it that unites things like blood vessels and lightning bolts, or nautilus shells and hurricanes? Nature is filled with patterns that follow fundamental mathematical rules. Mollusk shells, pine cones, hurricanes, even some galaxies all approximate to a spiral that can be described by the golden ratio. For every quarter turn, the spiral gets wider by a factor of this number, which is approximately 1.6. The branching patterns in arteries, veins, tree roots, and lightning forks are all examples of fractals, which are patterns that repeat themselves endlessly at smaller and smaller levels of detail. With all of these examples, the rule for the pattern applies regardless of size, or even the kind of thing that it describes. This month's podcast is about mathematics that can be used to describe the way that bacteria and electrons behave.
So my name is Professor Raymond Goldstein. I'm a professor in the Applied Mathematics and Theoretical Physics Department here at the University of Cambridge.
Raymond's group studies problems in biological physics, specifically the behaviour of cells and the collective behaviour of biological organisms. Collective behaviour can be seen in the dizzying patterns made by flocks of birds or shoals of fish, but it's also seen in bacteria. Bacteria have tiny tails called flagella, which they use to propel themselves through liquid. And as a single drop of liquid could contain billions of bacteria, understanding their collective behaviour is one of the things that Raymond was interested in.
We discovered all sorts of interesting collective swimming behaviour, where when you looked under the microscope at a dense suspension, you would see collective jets of high-speed swimming, you'd see various kinds of swirls that we called vortices, things like this that came and went on timescales of a few seconds. And for many years, we've had a lot of interest along with many people in the world to try to understand the origins of this collective behavior.
Looking at these patterns of collective swimming, one of Raymond's then PhD students developed a way of using tiny drops of water, each surrounded by a layer of oil, to encapsulate swimming bacteria.
What we predicted theoretically was true, that is, that if you have a small enough confining drop, you end up with a single spiral vortex inside of it as these bacteria swim round and round and round. Okay, so this was exciting, but there was a hitch in the problem in the sense that if you look very closely, we discovered that just at the edge of the drop, you found a layer of cells swimming in the opposite direction to what the central part of this chamber was doing. And we, for a long time, were very confused about exactly what was going on here. But these, what we'll call edge currents, turned out to be very persistent, ubiquitous, and in a sense, the key to everything.
We'll return to edge currents later. So Raymond's team was able to show that in a tiny enough droplet, you could produce a single vortex of bacteria, all gloriously swimming around in the same direction. So what next?
Okay, so once you study it in one circular domain, then you start thinking, okay, let's try to couple a bunch of these together and just make a microfluidic arrangement of these domains with little narrow necks in between and see how these vortices talk to each other.
The way to imagine this setup is a grid, a bit like Connect Four. Each of the circles is like a bacterial swimming pool, each containing millions of bacteria swimming around inside. And each pool is connected to its four neighbours, above, below, to the left and to the right, by a channel that flows between them.
These are tiny. The channels are down to a few microns wide. Just keep in mind, a typical human hair is about 80 microns across. So these are channels that are one-tenth the width of a human hair, and the domains can be anywhere from something on that order to hundreds of microns across. So it's a pattern of circular domains with little straight connections between them in the form of a lattice. The bacteria are grown up in a growth medium to a very high concentration. They're injected into the chamber so that they fill up all these little circular swimming pools, if you want to call it that, and all the gaps in between, and they just do their thing, provided that they're provided with enough oxygen and all of that. They're vigorously swimming, and they naturally self-organize into a pattern of circulation in these little circular domains.
Like the earlier experiments with the drop, this self-organization into vortices only happens when the chambers are small enough. Any bigger, the bacteria are all swimming around in relative disorder. But once you make the chambers a certain size, suddenly you get order out of chaos.
Using a technique of image processing, we can essentially construct the flow field, the velocities of the collective behavior of these bacteria in each of these little circular chambers. And then you could basically assign a variable, let's call it plus one if they're circulating clockwise and minus one if they're circulating anti-clockwise. And then you can look at the patterns of these pluses and minuses on this lattice and try to understand whether the system has just a random distribution of them or whether there's some correlation between the sense of circulation in one circular region and another.
The team did find a pattern. If the channels were fairly wide, then the bacteria in all the wells would be spinning in the same direction. But below a certain critical channel size, the array would suddenly switch, and adjacent wells would start to spin in opposite directions to each other. The weird thing was that this is something Raymond and his colleagues had seen before, with electrons in magnetic materials. A bit of physics now. Imagine, if you will, the billions of atoms inside a solid. Now, this is a bit of a simplification, but all these atoms have electrons orbiting around them, and electrons have a property called spin, which can either be up or down. In Raymond's experiments, the pattern of bacteria swimming in the wells was just like the pattern of electron spin in solid materials. In magnetic materials, the spin between neighbours is the same, and they all align. But if the spin is opposite between neighbours, then the material is non-magnetic, or antiferromagnetic, if you want to get technical.
So what we're finding here is that each of these little swimming pools full of bacteria coherently spins around, and you can assign to each of these a kind of spin-like variable that you could use to describe the way in which it talks to a neighbor. And so it's that kind of analogy. It's one of these things in physics where the mathematical description turns out to transcend the microscopic details. So in this case, whether you're talking about real electrons in a lattice of a solid-state material, or whether you're talking about circulating bacterial vortices in a microfluidic structure, the same mathematics holds.
The team found that a mathematical model, which is normally used to work out the quantum behavior of electrons in magnetic materials, could also be used to describe the way that these bacteria were behaving. So what was it about the size of these channels which was making the bacteria behave like this and creating these patterns? The answer is to do with edge currents, the thin layer of bacteria in the outside of the chamber flowing in the opposite direction to the vortex. Now, if you imagine two chambers next to each other, connected by a single channel, it might look a bit like a monkey nut. You know, a pair of peanuts with the shell still intact. If the gap between the two chambers is fairly wide, then the bacteria on the edge current can get through it.
The edge currents, the edge swimming bacteria from the left chamber, let's say, at the top, are going to happily swim through that constriction and into the right. And then they're going to go around the right one, and they're going to come back and swim at the bottom of that peanut indentation back to the left. And what this has the tendency to do is drive a continuous flow of fluid around the entire boundary and make for the circulation in the left chamber and in the right chamber to be in the same sense. Now, on the other hand, when the gap is really narrow, then basically the bacteria can't swim through that channel, but they still create a fluid flow which can be felt from one side to the other. And this has a tendency to make the two circulation patterns in the left and right half go in opposite directions. So it all has to do with whether the bacteria coherently can swim through the fluid gap.
The fact that the same laws which govern the spin of electrons also apply to the way that bacteria swim is kind of mind-blowing. But as well as this, studying the collective motion of bacteria is another step towards understanding how they behave in the real world.
It's thinking about the biological implications of these collective motions, which I think is the most challenging and interesting aspect of this particular research, which is basically asking, rather than the decades-long study of individual bacteria, how they swim, how they sense things, what are the collective behaviors? How does it affect their interaction with their environment? How does it affect their population dynamics? How does it affect their ability to navigate through complex three-dimensional geometries like are found in nature? So it's really a question of how this all impacts on the way the biological organisms function in their natural habitat.